Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for January the 15th, 2018. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, good evening, David. And before we went on the air, you reminded us that I guess this is our first year anniversary on BBS Radio.
Yep.
So happy anniversary, David.
Well, thank you. And thanks for to BBS Radio, Doug Newsom and Don Newsom, the owners and producers of this great network. It's been a privilege to be on BBS Radio for the last year, and looking forward to continued years ahead. It's been great.
Certainly, that's for sure. And before we begin, anyway, good evening, everyone. Tonight we have plenty of news to report, which will be of interest to veterans as well as those still serving in the military. We have news about the new military retirement system, emergency medical care in non-VA facilities, and more on the open burn pits issue and the documentary on that topic. News on VA mental health services and developments in the VA's program of comprehensive assistance for family caregivers. So we have lots to cover tonight, but first I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. And I want to remind our veterans that this is your show, the Veterans News Hour. David and I are simply the conduits to all your issues and concerns and gripes and griefs and anything else you want to express on the air tonight. Before we get to our news tonight, we begin with our Veterans History segment. And in commemoration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we will recognize the groundbreaking contributions of some famous African-American veterans who played historic roles in the U.S. history. While today's modern military is well known for its diversity and equal opportunity, we know from history that sadly was not always the case. So tonight we recognize some trailblazers from history. Going back 141 years ago to 1877, Henry O. Flipper became the first African-American to graduate from the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. He was assigned to the 10th U.S. Cavalry, one of only two black cavalry regiments organized after the Civil War. He fought at Eagle Springs, Texas, during the Victoria campaign against the Apache Indians in 1880. Unfortunately, though, in 1881, he was framed by some white officers and charged with embezzlement. He was found not guilty, but guilty of conduct unbecoming an officer and a gentleman. He was dishonorably discharged. His family fought his dishonorable discharge even after his death in 1940. In 1976, with the recognition of his treatment, he was finally granted an honorable discharge by the Department of the Army. In that same year, a bust of Lieutenant Flipper was unveiled at West Point. In 1999, President Clinton granted him a full pardon, and West Point now gives an award in his honor to the graduating senior who has displayed the highest qualities of leadership, self-discipline, and perseverance in the face of unusual difficulties while a cadet. World War II was known as the war fought by America's great generation. That certainly extended to the contributions of black Americans during that war who fought valiantly despite having to serve in the segregated units. World War II produced many famous leaders, including Benjamin O. Davis Sr., who became the first African American to serve as a general officer in the U.S. Army. General Davis entered the military service in 1898. During his military career, that spanned the next 50 years, he served in a wide range of duties, both overseas as well as stateside. His son, Benjamin O. Davis Jr., became the first African-American general in the U.S. Air Force. In other historical landmarks in WW2, in addition to the heroics of such famous units as the Tuskegee Airmen, we also recall the service of many African-American women during the war. As just one of many examples, African-American nurses served in all theaters of the war. By the conclusion of the war, about 600 African-American nurses had served. One of these nurses was Margaret E. Bailey, who accepted a commission in June 1944. She became the first African-American promoted to lieutenant colonel in the Army Nurse Corps before she retired. She was promoted to full colonel. The first African-American four-star general was General Roscoe Robinson, Jr., who attended West Point and graduated in 1951 with a degree in military engineering. After graduating, he served in the Korean War as a platoon leader and company commander. He received the Bronze Star. In 1963, he graduated from the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas. He received a master's degree from the University of Pittsburgh in 1964. In 1967, he served as battalion commander in Vietnam and received the Legion of Merit, the Distinguished Flying Cross, 11 air medals, and 2 Silver Stars. After a battle with leukemia, General Roscoe Robinson, Jr. died on July 22, 1993, at the age of 64. He was buried at Arlington National Cemetery. So this evening, as part of our Veterans History segment, we salute the historic contributions of African Americans who have served in the United States military. David, I know this past week has brought a lot of news affecting veterans as well as those serving. What can you tell us?
Well, thanks, Richard, and thanks for that military history segment, saluting some famous African Americans who served our country going back to the 1800s. It's a great day to remember not only Martin Luther King Jr., but the legacy of so many that served with great valor in the military, serving our country. We do have a lot of big news tonight. We have a variety of topics that we're going to cover. And the first topic I'd like to begin with is big news for those that are still serving on active duty or serving in the military reserves. Fiscal year 2016 National Defense Authorization Act created a new military retirement system, probably the first overhaul in that system in about 7 decades. So this is really big news. This new military retirement system essentially blends the traditional military retirement pension for those that serve at least 20 years, but it blends that along with a defined contribution system to service members' thrift savings plan, or TSP account. Now, this new blended retirement system goes into effect January 1st, 2018. So it's been in effect for about 2 weeks now. All service members serving as of December 31st, 2017 are grandfathered in under the existing, in other words, the old, or what they sometimes refer to as the legacy retirement system. No one who is currently serving will be automatically switched to this new so-called blended retirement system. Now, though they are grandfathered under the old or called legacy retirement system, active component service members with fewer than 12 years of active service and reserve component service members who have accrued fewer than 4,320 retirement points, and for those of you in the reserves, you know that your retirement pay is based on the number of points that you accrue. So if you're active duty and you have less than 12 years service, or if you're in the reserve component and you have accrued fewer than 4,320 retirement points as of the end of 2017, you will be given an option to opt into this blended retirement system. This opt-in or election period for this blended retirement system, for those that qualify for this opt-in, it begins January 1st, 2018, and concludes December 31st of 2018. So you basically, if you fall into that opt-in group, you have all of 2018 to study the pros and cons and then make a decision. Now, the military, fortunately, is taking this issue and its complexity very seriously. There's a lot of information that's out there on the web, and service members should be receiving information, training, and briefings about this, and having financial counselors in the military to advise them to explain what this new system really means to them and what their options are. So the other thing is all service members who start active, who enter the military on or after January 1st, 2018, they'll automatically be enrolled in this new system, which is, again, called the Blended Retirement System. If you want more information, the website to visit is militarypay.defense.gov/blended-retirement. Again, if you want more information about this new military retirement system, go to the website militarypay.defense.gov/blended-retirement. There's a lot of information on that website, so hopefully it'll answer most of your questions, but if it doesn't, there's also ways to get more information, get your questions answered on that page. Now, another financial news affecting those on active duty, good news is that basic pay will go up 2.4% in 2018. That's the largest pay raise for those on active duty, largest pay raise in 16 years. And for veterans receiving VA disability compensation or a military pension, there will be a 2% increase in those payments in 2018. So, again, that's good news on the financial front. Rick, over to you.
Thanks, David. In news affecting veterans who have received emergency medical care in non-VA facilities, this past Wednesday, January the 10th, 2018, the VA announced that it has, through a Federal Register notice, revised its regulations concerning payment or reimbursement for emergency treatment for non-service-connected conditions at non-VA facilities. VA will begin processing claims for reimbursement of reasonable costs that were only partially paid by the Veterans Health Insurance, OHI. Those costs may include hospital charges, professional fees, and emergency transportation, and such as ambulances. This change comes on the heels of an earlier announcement that the VA was taking immediate action to address delayed payments to community providers. Effective January the 9th, the VA updated a portion of its regulations in response to an April 2016 U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims decision in the case of veteran Richard Staab, S-T-A-A-B, that stated the VA can no longer deny reimbursement when other health insurance pays a portion of the treatment expenses. The VA will apply the updated regulations to claims pending with VA on or after April 8, 2016, and to new claims. By law, the VA still may not reimburse veterans for the cost of copayments, cost shares, and deductibles required by their other health insurance. The VA will work directly with community providers to get additional information needed to review and process these claims. Previous claims do not have to be resubstituted unless requested by the VA. Well, that's good news for, I know some of our clients who have those issues, so that's good news for them. Back to you, David.
Yep, and let me add some more background to that issue because it really is a big issue for veterans who are forced to receive emergency medical care in non-VA facilities. This issue has caused a tremendous amount of financial hardship and grief for some veterans and their families when they've had to receive emergency medical care in non-VA facilities, and they end up being billed, or there's problems when their own insurances, private insurances, billed, and it's resulted in a lot of litigation. And the case that you mentioned, the Richard Staab case, was really a landmark decision, and now it appears the VA is trying to clarify some of its rules. So let me give you more of the background. And this is according to the VA's own website, the information I'm about to give you. So you can take that as, you know, kind of a primary source for information. Not that it necessarily is always going to be accurate. We know sometimes the VA does make mistakes. But here we go. Here's a summary of where things stand on this complicated issue of veterans receiving emergency medical care. There's basically two categories. The first of all is emergency care of service-connected medical conditions. In some situations, the VA can pay for emergency care for veteran service connected condition. The VA is authorized to pay for emergency care claims in the following four scenarios. First, if it's a VA-adjudicated service-connected condition. The second, if it's non-service-connected disability, but that's associated with or held to be aggravating a service-connected disability. The third is a condition of a veteran who is considered permanently and totally disabled from a service-connected disability. And this is important. Richard, you and I hear all the time about veterans who are rated 100% service-connected disabled by the VA, but they haven't been given that important permanent label to it. So they're rated 100% totally disabled, but the VA has not conceded that their permanent, their total disability is a permanent situation. It's up for further review at some point by the VA. So that's why the permanent total status is so important. Now, the fourth scenario where the VA will pay for emergency care in a private facility for a veteran's service-connected disability is for a condition of a veteran participating in a Chapter 31 vocational rehab or rehabilitation program. Now, those are the situations. After emergency care has been provided, the veteran, his or her family members, friends, or medical staff should notify the nearest VA medical facility immediately and preferably within 72 hours. The VA staff should be willing and able to assist to ensure the veterans receive immediate medical attention without interruption. After the emergency condition has been treated and the veteran is stable, a veteran can be transferred to the VA if the care and treatment is available. Now, I want to emphasize that last part. They can be transferred to the VA if the care and treatment is available. That's not always available. I have a client right now that's been through that situation, and he was in a number of civilian non-VA medical facilities, and he was cleared to be transferred by those facilities, but the VA did not have an available bed for him. So it was basically he was on hold for the transfer. Meanwhile, he was still a patient in the civilian facility. Now, although it's highly recommended, contacting the VA is not required for the VA to adjudicate and pay emergency claims. Claims should be submitted to the VA as soon as possible after the emergency care has been provided. This ensures that all information is still readily available and the payments hopefully will be made in a timely fashion. In most cases, providers of emergency care file the claim directly with the VA and veterans will not have to take further action. Emergency care claims for service-connected conditions must be filed with the VA within 2 years of the date treatment was received. That's very important. You know the VA. They've got deadlines for certain things. And in this situation, emergency care for service-connected conditions, you must file that claim within 2 years of the date of treatment. So that's the first category. That's emergency care for service-connected conditions. What about non-service-connected medical conditions? Well, beginning January 8th of 2018, in other words, just last week, in accordance with these new amended regulations, the VA will begin processing claims for reimbursement for reasonable costs that were only partially paid by the veteran's other health insurance. Other health insurance, the VA refers to as OHI. These costs may include, as you said earlier, Richard, hospital costs, charges, professional fees, and emergency transportation such as ambulance travel. The amended regulation was published in the Federal Register, and that explains how the VA should theoretically process and pay these claims. The VA will apply the updated regulations to claims pending with the VA on or after April 8, 2016, as well as to new claims. Claims for emergency treatment or travel related to non-service-connected conditions provided on or after January 8, 2018 must be submitted within 90 days of the latest of the following: the date of discharge, the date of death if death occurred during treatment or transportation, or the date that all efforts to obtain payment or reimbursement from a third party have been exhausted. So again, you have another deadline there. If you're being treated for emergency care for a non-service connected condition, you need to be aware of a relatively short deadline for submitting those claims. The VA payment under this situation for a non-service connected condition in a non-VA facility for emergency care, the VA payment is the lesser of the amount for which the veteran is personally liable, or 70% of the applicable Medicare fee schedule amount, excluding copayment, cost share, or deductible. associated with the veteran's other health insurance. Now, if this sounds complicated, it is. It's not all that simple to follow, and I certainly don't want to become the cure for anyone's insomnia out there. So if you're interested in more information about this, the good news is a lot of information on the VA's website, and they also have a toll-free dedicated hotline available to where you can speak to a customer service representative specifically about these issues, about emergency care, and grab a pen and paper, and I'll give it to you. For those of you that may be in the situation, it's 1-877-466-7124. Again, the toll-free VA number, the dedicated hotline to answer questions about how the VA will pay or when the VA will pay for emergency care and private medical facilities for service or non-service connected disabilities. Toll-free 1-877-466-7124. Their hours are Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's another funny thing about the VA. Some of their hotlines, they have very limited hours. So if you're in a different time zone, remember, this 8 to 5 is Eastern time zone. I had the occasion just last week to call one of my local VA facilities on behalf of one of my clients, and I called at 3:32 in the afternoon, thinking, well, surely they're going to be working at least till 4:30 or 5, right? I was wrong. Their office closed every day at 3:30. I was 2 minutes late, and that phone rang and rang and rang. I discovered that because I ended up calling a different office that was open after 3:30. So another little obstacle with the VA bureaucracy that we've all grown to know and love so well, I guess. So, Rick, back over to you. I understand you have some news on the issue of veterans suffering from illnesses caused by open burn pits overseas.
Yes, David. As you know, we've been discussing burn pits on prior shows, and it's a very important issue for our young veterans who served in the Iraq and Afghanistan conflicts, causing lung diseases and various kinds of cancers to these troops stationed near those pits. On September the 11th, 2017 show, we had an interview with film director and producer Greg Lovett. His latest film is on the burn pits issue and is entitled Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. The film deals with the important issue of open burn pits commonly used in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and which now are suspected of causing large numbers of veterans to suffer various serious health problems due to the numerous toxic substances which were incinerated in those huge burn pits. We have described these burn pits as this generation's Agent Orange. To find out more about the film, check it out on Facebook by typing in the words Burn Pit Documentary in the Facebook search engine. If you are in the Washington, D.C. area, please attend the screening of Delay, Deny, Hope You Die at the Landmark E Street Cinema. That's the Landmark E Street Cinema in Washington, D.C. on March the 8th, 2018 at 7 p.m. Even if you aren't in the Washington area, please contact your representative and the two U.S. senators and urge them or their staff to attend. Tickets are free while they last. This award-winning documentary tells the story of American soldiers who were poisoned by burn pits on military bases in Iraq and Afghanistan. Tens of thousands are sick, yet their plight has largely been ignored by mainstream media. It is imperative that you understand the magnitude of this issue because we need your help to get them the care they need. I know in my own case, we have a number of clients that we represent who suffer from these burn pits. And they would describe to me what they looked like and, you know, just everything that they went through. But until I actually saw it in the documentary, I really could not appreciate exactly what it was about and the effect that these burn pits must have on these men and women who served in that area. I mean, you're talking acres and acres, sometimes miles, of a rich, dark cloud that our veterans have to live in and work under those conditions. You can't see the sun. I mean, it can be a beautiful beautiful, perfectly blue sky, but you're not going to be able to see the sun. And then these burn pits, we also have to remember the effects that these burn pits have on the civilians that live in these countries. You know, that's another cost of war that, that we don't, I think, put into the formula when we're going and invading foreign lands. For those able to attend the free March 8th screening in Washington, D.C., and please register for your free ticket on the website, eventbrite.com. That's eventbrite.com. Eventbrite is one word. More showings of the Burn Pits documentary are already scheduled or tentatively scheduled for other cities around the country. The showings are based on crowdfunding, so they depend on a certain minimum number of tickets being sold. You can order your tickets online at the website tugg.com. That's T-U-G-G.com. And under the Films tab on that website, look for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. Again, the website for ordering tickets is tugg.com. And look under the Films tab that on that webpage for the film Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. David, I want to commend you for bringing that movie to the Tampa-Brandon area. It was well-received, and we had quite a discussion after the movie. Again, you can also find out more about the film and watch short clips or trailers about the film on its Facebook page. Again, go to Facebook and type in the word Burn Pits Documentary in the search engine. You know, just to, again, reiterate, the Burn Pits is this generation's Agent Orange, and let's hope and pray that we don't take 20 years like Congress did with Agent Orange, getting its service-connected for our men and women who served in Vietnam and were exposed to that hazardous substance. So hopefully this documentary will put a little fire under everyone's seat of their pants there and maybe get Congress to start really seriously looking at it. You know, one of the things I remember, David, I'm thinking back to some of the interviews that they did in that documentary, and you might have your own impression, but the one fellow said, you know, when I left for the war, when I left for Iraq, you know, I was given a physical, and I was in perfect health. I was an athlete in high school. I had nothing wrong with me. And then when I came back, I started having, you know, these lumps all over my body. I had these issues with my breathing. And clearly, there was nothing, no intervening cause other than the burn pits that he could you know, look at. And he described what he went through and the time that he spent in under these conditions. And he said, you know, when I went to, when I signed up, I knew I could, I might die, I might lose limbs, a lot of different things. I could be a prisoner of war. A lot of things could have happened to me when I signed up. And I agreed to do that and expose myself to those consequences. He said, but the one thing I did not expect is that my government would turn their back on me after exposing me to these hazardous substances and make me fight for my health. And how telling that was. I don't think I'll ever forget that one interview. How about you, David?
Yeah, no, and I'd like to, if I could, add my two cents. I think it's a really important topic. Like to remind our listeners, great thing about BBS Radio is all our shows are archived podcasts. So look on our webpage, bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour. Look for our September 11, 2017 show. We had two guests that night, and one of them was the film director and producer Greg Lovett that Richard just talked about. And we interviewed him about that. We interviewed him from his home. It was a pre-recorded interview. He lives over in Holland now, but It's a really compelling film. It's about an hour long. And, Richard, as you say, there is a free screening March 8th in Washington, D.C. Tickets have already been paid for and to get the free tickets. And as of earlier today when I checked, there were still about 125 tickets left. All they need to do is go to Eventbrite. That's event, then B-R-I-T-E, eventbrite.com, and, you know, type in the search engine. The film is Delay, Deny, Hope You Die. Now, another source, Richard, as you mentioned, is the website tugg.com, T-U-G-G.com, and it was through that you know, that we sponsored the Brandon, Florida screening back in early November of 2017. We had a really good turnout, and some of the members of the audience had their own connections within the military, and they were trying to get some higher-ranking service members in Washington, D.C. to watch, and hopefully to get Secretary David Shulkin, VA Secretary, to watch. I don't know if that happened. But the good news is this film is available, and if you can't find one of the screened events, go to the Facebook page, type in Burn Pits Documentary, and you will then find the Facebook page for this. It's Greg Lovett's page for the documentary. And there are links there where you can also purchase a DVD copy for yourself of the film. So it's that important, and I wish, Richard, we've talked about it, I wish every member of Congress would watch this. It's that important. You know, these burn pits went on for years and years. Some of them were 10 acres in size, burning 24 hours a day. Every type of toxic military-related waste and garbage that you can imagine, from chemicals, paints, metals, wood, human waste, even human body parts. You name it, they were burning this stuff, and it was 24 hours a day. And as you described it, it would put a permanent cloud over some of these bases. Clearly, these sorts of things in the United States would violate our own environmental laws. And the contract the U.S. military had with the defense contractors that were responsible for these burn pits required the contractors to follow EPA rules, even though it was overseas. And that clearly was not done. There was the money where they could have bought, and they eventually did, buy high-temperature incinerators that would burn this stuff relatively cleaner than the open burn pits, but they were not done for years and years. Now, most of the open burn pits have been shut down, most but not all, it's my understanding. But even when they were shut down, we're talking about, you know, well over 100,000 veterans have already signed up for the VA's burn pit registry, and I know that's an undercount because we've talked to veterans who have been so skeptical about the accuracy and the usefulness of the questions asked on that they refused to sign up. Recently, on PBS, former Vice President Joe Biden was interviewed about this, and he was asked about the burn pits because his son, Bo Biden, who died of brain cancer, was a military reservist who served in Iraq. He served at a base that had one of the largest burn pits, and his story, Bo Biden's story, took up most of one of the chapters in the Burn Pits book that this documentary is based upon. So it's really important. Now, I understand we have a caller on line one, Doug, so let's go ahead and take our first caller. Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour. Who is this, please?
Yeah, appreciate it. I'm David. I'm listening online from California.
Oh, very good. Thank you for
David.
Calling. What's on your mind tonight?
Good evening, David. How are you?
Yeah, greetings. Well, a couple of months ago, actually, I guess it was right as Hurricane Harvey was hitting Texas, I got a news flash from, I believe it was from the union that was serving most of the VA hospitals. And they were talking about the Congress of the year before had authorized the hiring of 40,000 new employees. And they were really bugged because apparently the VA under Trump was not doing any hiring. And so I'm wondering, first of all, are you aware of this? And then as you were talking about that movie, the, good grief.
Burn Pit.
Burn Pit.
The Delay Deny movie, too.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The idea that what crossed my mind was, if you were to think about hospital staff with a situation like hazmat, exposure to hazmat,
yes,
the hospital staff would basically be witnesses. If they saw the same, with the same regularity, the same people coming in with the same kinds of issues or symptoms or conditions, and all of a sudden you know, everybody's got privacy rights in medical, but if you're, you know, if there's a cancer cluster because everybody is exposed to a certain condition, then, you know, the health department should know about it. The upper administration should know about it. And I'm wondering if the lack of hiring has to do with, you know, if the staff are noticing these things and they can never get any, you know, they can't get anything positive out of the administration, or they, you know, they're sworn to silence because of a hazardous waste condition. And in some cases, you know, like the depleted uranium rounds and whatnot, since that would be considered some secret weapon, so to speak, I understand as well the, what are the stealth bombers have got a paint on them that is so toxic it's incredible. And so probably anybody that ever works on those stealth fighters or bombers, they've probably got cancer clusters as well. And so the medical staff have got to, you know, where do the medical staff go? And are the new medical staff sworn to secrecy instead of healing? So I see where I'm going with it.
If I can interject, in the movie Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, there's a doctor, Dr. Miller from Vanderbilt, and he was the one who was doing a study on these veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who were exposed to the burn pits, and he clearly saw a correlation, especially with the respiratory issues. And the way the VA and our government handled it was they stopped sending our veterans to Dr. Miller, basically putting a kibosh to any further study by him. So, yes, you know, there was a doctor out there who was pinpointing this and who's gathering some pretty good evidence in support of the vet. But then our government turned around and said, well, we don't want that information anymore. So they stopped sending them to Dr. Miller.
Yeah, if I could add something too, David, your point about the hiring. Yes, it was my understanding as of the start of this year that the VA had about 45,000 open, unfilled positions, and for a short time there was a hiring freeze. But it's also my understanding, and if correct me if you believe I'm mistaken, or if any of our listeners think I'm mistaken, but that freeze as applied to the VA ended, but certainly this. The shortfall of medical providers has been around for many, many years. This was not something that just started a year ago with the current administration. You know, the VA healthcare system kind of goes through cycles of scandal and then quiet and then scandal again. And one of the most recent scandals in 2014 emanating from the Phoenix VA medical facility, but then bringing to light other facilities that were, you know, understaffed, long waiting times, and then the falsification of waiting time numbers while some of the senior people were getting their bonuses. But, yeah, there's a shortfall, and there's shortfalls in many areas, including the mental health area. So that is another issue. But your point about shouldn't these doctors, healthcare providers, nurses, others be witnesses to this thing? And certainly yes. I think that's a great point, and I would hope that there would be you know, medical personnel that would have the courage and willingness to, even if necessary, to be a whistleblower, to stand up. The example that Richard mentioned of Dr. Miller from Vanderbilt was the same one I was thinking about when you were describing, David, the situation, because he's an expert in that. And a couple things that he pointed out that's discussed in the film is that he started noticing just a couple years after the war started, so we're talking about, you know, 2004, 2005, that his waiting room was filled up with young men and women in their twenties or up to late twenties, and they were having symptoms that you would usually find with very elderly people, but the tests that were typically being done, X-rays and some other tests, were not catching the type of lung damage that he was able to uncover with tissue sampling from the lungs. I mean, there are more precise, specific medical terms of what I'm using, but the point is, Dr. Miller, in his medical expertise, concluded that the kind of damage to these veterans' lungs was caused to toxic exposure. And they all had something in common. These veterans had served around or, you know, right next to these open burn pits. So it's something that needs a lot of attention, And there's many goals here. One is to make sure the VA provides proper treatment, because some of these veterans, because they're considered non-service-connected disabilities, they're not getting VA health care coverage for it. And then number two, they're not getting disability compensation for it, because the VA right now is taking the position that the medical evidence isn't clear. What we need is for Congress to pass a law like they did for Agent Orange, saying that if you served in these areas around these burn pits and you come up with one of a list of these respiratory or cancers and other related conditions, that they will presume it's service-connected and stop making it so darn difficult for these veterans to have to go find at their own expense experts like Dr. Miller that are needed to prove their cases. So this is really an extraordinary film. I applaud Greg Lovett. This shows a difference that one person can make. He read this book about the burn pits, and he thought, well, surely someone would have done a documentary on it. Well, he hadn't. He learned that no one had, so he decided he would. He's an American.
You know what's incredible?
Go ahead, David.
Can you hear me?
Yes, okay, go ahead, yes.
Oh, yeah. What's incredible about this is, if you've got a military base that's kind of a temporary one as opposed to a permanent one, there are portable incinerators that can be brought in so that if somebody's dealing with hazmat, there's a way to have scrubbers on it and that you're not poisoning the whole base. The very idea that somebody would install I'm not sure, is this actual open-air pit?
Pits were open air. They were either shallow pits dug into the ground or just on the surface of the land, and they were just open. There was money, according to even testimony on the film of a U.S. senator who said there was money for these high temperature incinerators, probably what you're alluding to, or even a higher tech version of that, that were not being used. And these contractors, we were paying, these contractors, and their profit, they're looking to save money, so they're not spending the money, they're not doing this, they're taking shortcuts, and then they're blaming the military for not supervising them, which takes a heck of a lot of nerve, it really is outrageous. And when you think about it, you just mentioned, David, the difference between maybe a temporary facility. Yeah, we know it's wartime. With the invasion of Iraq in 2003, military is moving, they're in a lot of temporary camps, but we're talking about facilities that are so permanent and large, they would hold 30 to 40,000 troops, as large as some of the largest installations in the United States. They were so fully, equipped that they had their own Burger King and other fast food joints, just like you would see in American base, stateside. So to say that they can afford for all these other things and not protect our troops from what is well-documented pollution, I mean, it's really outrageous. And these people are dying. There are people dying.
And they burned everything. When you see this documentary, I mean, they were putting vehicles in these burn pits and putting gasoline on top of them and just lighting them on fire.
Go ahead, David.
Well, the next thing I was going to raise was regarding the 40,000 hires that could be in the VA. One of the scandals that showed up, and it showed up right around the time of Katrina, because if you remember back then, that was when Walter Reed was big in the news for problems. And apparently George Bush Jr. had privatized Walter Reed to Halliburton. And Halliburton, there was a second name that they were using for the subsidiary, but it was a Halliburton subsidiary. So as much as they were blaming the Vets Administration, the reality was that it was Halliburton and their subsidiary that was the problem. So when you start talking about these contractors, if you think about Halliburton and they're not treating the troops, but then who's the contractor that's setting fire to junk outside of within the walls of a military base and poisoning 30,000 troops? Here's Halliburton again, who, in my eyes, if you're doing an open pit exposure to the troops, you're poisoning the troops. It's a saboteur. It's not a contractor at this point. It's somebody who's intentionally trying to weaken the troops. So, that's the way I'm looking at it.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling, and thank you for your insight. And I encourage you, if you haven't seen the film, go to Facebook and type in this Facebook search engine, Burn Piss Documentary, and you'll see the Facebook page started by a film director, Greg Lovett. And there's some 1 or 2 minute clips from the film. There's also information where people can look for local screenings, and it'd be great to help get the word out about this.
Yeah, we'll do.
Thank you so much, and thank you for calling.
Hey, no trouble. Break a leg.
Good evening.
Thank you, David.
Happy New Year.
Thank you, too. Well, that's great, and I thank you for David calling in. I really appreciate his insight and hearing his thoughts. So, burn pits, it's an issue that's not going away, and we need to continue attention on that. Now, Richard, I'd like to continue with a couple other issues.
You have some information about some veterans' mental health programs.
Yes, exactly. It's an issue we've talked about on prior shows. It's the veterans' mental health programs. The VA issued a press release last Tuesday, January the 9th, 2018, indicating that the president had signed an executive order titled, quote, Supporting Our Veterans During Their Transition from Uniform Service to Civilian Life, unquote. This executive order directs the Department of Defense, Department of Veterans Affairs, and Homeland Security to develop a plan to ensure that all the new veterans receive mental health care for at least 1 year following their separation from service. All three of these departments are supposed to work together and develop a joint action plan to ensure that the 60% of new veterans who currently do not qualify for enrollment in VA health care, primarily due to a lack of verified service connection related to the medical issue at hand, they will receive treatment and access to mental health care for at least 1 year following their separation. I think this is really important. Hopefully it will pan out. You may be wondering, how does the Department of Homeland Security get lumped in with defense and VA? Well, they've discovered that Homeland Security, nearly 28% of the Homeland Security workforce are veterans. Many of their new employees of their workforce are people that have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and their mental health issues. That's the reality, PTSD and other things. So hopefully this executive order will be something more than just window dressing that will result in some...
Well, not only that, and I would recommend to our listeners out there to contact your congressman about this particular program, because, it's limiting it to 1 year following their separation from service. Well, you know, we've got many, many veterans that, they're getting mental health ongoing for the rest of their lives. So, yes, it's a start, but I really, really hope that that plan evolves into something a little bit more substantive and significant for our veterans, because 1 year of mental health following service is really not a lot.
Well, if I could just jump in on that, hopefully within that 1 year, the veterans will get treatment, and that treatment may result in the necessary diagnosis that might result in, a service-connected disability claim, which then may result in further medical care by the VA. So,
right, and that's all possibilities. But again, that's a lot of jumping through hoops, which, based on my experience, we really don't see, the VA willing to extend themselves like they should. And another thing to add to that is they should be talking about mental health prior to discharge. I know in the Canadian military, when you are deployed and you return home, you are automatically sent for mental health evaluation and treatment. You are also not permitted to be deployed again for a minimum of 6 months and possibly up to a year to another engagement. And, our military in this country, that's not the case. One, they don't really get the mental health that they should be getting during the service, and then they're being deployed pretty regularly as opposed to staying home and being with their families and giving themselves some time. So, we got a long way to go in this country when it comes to mental health, and maybe this executive order is going to start to do something. But, the proof's in the results, and we'll see what happens. What else do you have there, David?
Well, I know we've got about 5 minutes left in the show. We do have some other news regarding both the VA and their medical care and mental health care, and also news about the VA's caregiver program, which should be of interest to many veterans and their families, particularly our wounded warriors. I'd like to again remind our listeners that on BBS Radio, you can listen to our prior archived shows, and if you go back and look at our October 9th program, we had as our guest Lauren Price, a Navy veteran and co-founder of the Veteran Warrior. She's actually lobbied and testified before Congress on this very issue, which is, you know, assistance for family caregivers. Well, here's the news from this past week. About 10 days ago, the VA announced that it's seeking public comments on how it can further strengthen and improve the caregiver support through this program of comprehensive assistance for family caregivers. It issued a Federal Register notice, that has started a 30-day comment period to hear from people about whether or not this program should be changed or refined to better serve veterans and their family caregivers. According to Dr. Shulkin, the VA secretary, in his words, quote, "With this opportunity, VA is following through on our promise to provide better service and improve consistency for the program. We've heard participants' concerns and encouraged them to share their personal experiences and perspectives to help make changes," unquote. Well, the VA needs feedback. Again, as our guest on the October 9th show explained, that's Lauren Price, there are a lot of flaws with this program where the veterans and their families, they're having the rug pulled out from underneath them before the veterans were back on their feet, and they're relying on their families to be caregivers. And this is a very important program where, theoretically, the VA would provide support for certain family caregivers of eligible veterans. This is the post 9/11 generation, hasn't been expanded further than that, but it would include a monthly stipend, access to health care for eligible caregivers, counseling, training, and respite care, which is very important. So if you'd like more information about this program, go to caregiver.va.gov. Again, that's caregiver.va.gov. It's very important, and if you're interested or you have knowledge about this, go to the va.gov website, look under the link for the media room, and then under that, look for the link for press releases, and you'll see the press release for this program from January the 5th of this year, and on that press release, you'll see the link to the Federal Register notice. You can dive into the nitty-gritty details about this, which is important, to see what the VA is proposing, and there's a 30-day comment period, which is already running, for you to offer your opinions. Really, now's the time to speak up. So we're about running out of time, Richard, so why don't we remind our listeners about the VA's Coaching into Care program.
Yeah, the Coaching into Care program, we talk about it every week. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning to civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call, toll free at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to remind everyone that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has the Veterans Crisis Line. To help, call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Well, it's been another quick hour, and it's time for us to go for this evening. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and invite you listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show's website, which is bbsradio.com/the Veterans News Hour, where you can also find archived podcasts of our prior shows for your benefit. So please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.